I've been requested to give a talk or reflection, and so this is the style of reflection. So the main thing is to observe how what I say affects you. So that, you know, you're aware of how the tone of voice, the words I use, how they affect you in your emotional sense or intellectual, how you react to my speaking. So this is like meditation in itself, to be the observer rather than somebody's just come to listen to somebody give a Dhamma talk. So this is an example of reflection, of being the observer, noticing, paying attention to your the state of mind, to your citta. In Thailand, they use the word citta for the mind. So when they talk about watch your mind, watch your citta or jit. So this is, of course, consciousness. Consciousness, they're all experiencing consciousness. This is common where you know, there's not individual, personal consciousness. So this is not about my consciousness and yours, but we're all experiencing consciousness at this very moment. So this is just a fact, a recognition of the way it is. And then the sense of individuality, of personal identities come in to consciousness, such as we start thinking, I'm Ajahn Sumedho, and on and on like this. Then I differentiate, you know, myself from you, have a name, also identify with the body. I'm this body sitting up here, and you're those bodies out there. So that's a separateness that I perceive through seeing in consciousness. It's a reflection of here and now Dhamma, the way it is. So when a baby's born, it has a separate form, separate body, and it's conscious. And then after it's born, it accumulates the conditioning of the mother, father, brothers, sisters, peers, cultural conditioning, social identities, and all that is acquired after one is born. So in terms of that, we're all different. We all have different memories, different parents, different perceptions of ourself and our and the identification that we have with the physical body. So just pointing out that the big obstructions to liberation from delusion are the man-made, human-made conditioning after birth, after a baby's born. These are the fetters that create the problems in our own mind and in our families, in our society. Because these identities they're always divisive, separative, and of course they conflict, and then we have to live in families with brothers, sisters, with parents, with grandparents, and in groups of other ethnic groups or social identities, and onward, that are endlessly complicated, and our identities are increased as we grow older. So we become very complicated people, personalities. Now when like what you've been doing for the past hour is, you know, I assume, mindfulness meditation, which is, you know, the opportunity given here at this time to be the observer of these various conditions that happen to arise in your consciousness during the plus hour of sitting meditation. So, you know, for each one, it's different. You know, we aren't going to have exactly the same feelings or physical sensations or memories or anything as another person. But consciousness is the same. We're all experiencing consciousness through a human form that's sitting and breathing. So these are the what we call the basic foundations for practice, is observing the most obvious reality, the most obvious facts of this moment, is the posture, sitting posture, the breathing, and then being aware of the arising and ceasing of thoughts, emotions, sensations through the bodies we have through the senses. Now that is putting us into this paradigm of Buddha and Dhamma, because Buddha, in the sense of refuge in the Buddha, is to be the knower of the Dhamma, or the way it is. And so when we, you know, in the Pali Buddhist tradition, we oftentimes perform these, say these refuges, Bhutang Saranangacchami, Dhammang Saranangacchami, Sangkang Saranangacchami, because it's part of a Pali tradition, or, you know, it's a ceremony, and we do it because we connect it to Theravada Buddhist Pali tradition. Or is it more profound than that? Is it just old ceremonies carried forward in time, or does it have any practical use? Well, to me, it's been, you know, I find this a very good reminder of the position of being the knowing, aware of the way it is, and practicing in the right way. So, Bhutto, then, taking refuge in Buddha, is taking refuge in awareness, mindfulness, reflective consciousness, reflecting on the conditions that one is experiencing through the body and through the mind. And then we're seeing the conditions and the experience that is present at this moment as Dhamma, rather than as me and mine, personal attitudes, or the world that we believe in, because we all believe the world that we're living in is the real world. But when you examine it, everyone lives in a different world. The world I create with my personality, I don't think has much in common with the world you probably create. And that's why human relationships are so difficult. We all assume we're living in the same world when we're actually not. So it's a wonder that society isn't more of a mess than it is. When you contemplate the problem of ignorance of Dhamma. So this word Dhamma is a very important word, because we don't have really a suitable English equivalent. So we you know, take it into the English vocabulary, or translate it as best of reality, or the truth of the way it is, here and now. And it's accessible always through mindfulness. We see Dhamma when we're aware and non-attached. When we're attached, then we see a world. We see one of myself and my views, my opinions, my feelings, my prejudices, and all the rest, memories arise and cease accordingly. So in this mindfulness, emphasis on mindfulness, or sati sampatthana, is the access, the escape hatch from the world of delusion that we tend to live in. Through mindfulness, we realize the truth of the way it is, the Dhamma. And we can't do it any other way. We can have views about Dhamma which tend to be formed with our intellects, or the definitions or ideas or definitions we get from books or from other teachers. But the Dhamma isn't about being defined or conveyed through language, but it's immediate here and now, seeing, knowing the way it is, ability to discern reality from illusion. So this is what the Lord Buddha was very successful at doing. This is why we call him the Buddha, because this word is quite significant. It means awakened, conscious human being. He wasn't a Devada or a god or an ethereal form. He was a human form awakened to reality. So this is, and of course this is the historical Buddha, Gautama the Buddha of ancient India, but the teaching he gave us has been handed down from generation to generation to this very moment here at Tisarana. And it's because he established the teaching in a form that could be somehow managed to survive through the rise and falls of so many kingdoms, empires, and changing conditions. So even now we see this teaching coming, taking interest and established here in this remote part of the world. It seems remote to me. If you've been living in England, which always seems to be the center of everything. So the Buddha pointed out, you know, his teaching isn't some kind of intellectual exercise and in extravagant thinking or subtle concepts, but it's a way of pointing. It's always pointing at the here and now, reality here and now. Now, in the worlds we live in, it's all about time. Isn't it? We live we consider the real world all about time, about the past and the future. The thinking mind is a vehicle that creates these concepts of time as reality. So we all remember yesterday, the past, our own personal memories from our lives so far, and then the future, tomorrow and onward. And so this is the way that time tends to be the real world for ignorant humanity. And yet the Buddha was pointing to akalika dhamma, which is timeless reality. And of course that, and when you try to think using thought to conceive timelessness, it's impossible. You know, because thought itself is a time-bound condition, a thinking process, the ability to think. Just notice how the thinking process works. You have some kind of thought arise and it connects to another. So we proliferate in thoughts, and that's about yesterday, last year, tomorrow, next year, all our important things we have to do in the future, the memories of the past, the regrets or the resentments that we might feel about remembering the events our past. And so the real world to the ignorant human mind is a time creation. It's about personal feelings. It's about me as a separate person and the identities that I have, the way I'm conditioned, my cultural identities and my hopes and expectations, the sense of my self-worth is established through my past, what I, you know, how I see myself in terms of a good person or bad person or whatever, arises in time. So in the Refuges of Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha, where actually this is a reminder too, let go of thinking to rest in the present moment, to just be that awakened consciousness here and now. So in this emphasis on Pachubana Tamma, this is the Pali word for here and now, reality, is timeless. It has nothing to do with time. So it's inconceivable, but it's knowable. It's recognizable in the present. So this is what mindfulness is, our ability to break through the illusions of time, the conditioning we've acquired, to ultimate reality, to Dhamma, through a simple, imminent openness in the present moment. And it's so subtle that most people don't get it. And they're always trying to find something. You know, even my words get in the way, because you start thinking and trying to be mindful through the fact that I'm saying mindfulness here and now, awakening in the present. These are not to be grasped, but merely attempts at pointing at making the present moment something that, I mean, that which is recognizable. Not to tell you what you should do or create more sense of your, you know, of self or Buddhism or meditation, but just an encouragement to trust yourself to be open and aware in the present. Not through focusing on anything in particular, but just in a wide perspective of, say, listening or awareness that is receptive. Open, not concentrated on any object in particular, but open to the present, here and now. And that, of course, that is, to do that, we let go of our own thinking process and emotional concerns of the present to just have this moment of, say, a relaxed attention to the present. When you're trying to find the present, of course, you've missed the point, because you don't have to find it, you just recognize. and consciousness is no problem, because you're conscious, the present is here and now, consciousness is here and now, but your personality usually gets in the way. Or the thinking process, trying to figure it out, will always take you to a state of being unsure, uncertain, or doubt. You'll never be quite sure whether you're being mindful when you start thinking about it. And then your cultural conditioning, you know, the way you've, the kind of religious background you come from, or the ethnic identities, all that one has, are all conditioned and tend to distort the present moment into something that really isn't.